It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. And we don't normally have a program on Friday, but kind of a topical conversation have today. Lee Touchfarber from Renew Roaring Fork is here once again. Another of the Renew Talks Health series is tonight at Renew. The topic this time, is, you might be surprised, it's not about coronavirus or COVID-19. CBD, the cannabis conversation. You know, this has been going on for years and years. And recently, the federal government decriminalized cannabis, different from marijuana, mm-hmm. right? And so that's why a lot of these stores, I mean, the kiosks at the mall during Christmas time were very prevalent, touting CBD oil mm-hmm. and all of its many, many uses. Mm-hmm. And there's actually so the reason why Renew is hosting this talk is because there's actually some research that suggests cannabis, CBD oil, can help in certain ways with aging and people that have various challenges associated with aging.
Definitely. So as people age, they're more predisposed to getting, you know, a number of conditions, whether it's aches and pains orthopedically or it's anything having to do with sort of the brain and sort of inflammatory or neurological issues. And what we're learning based on the research, and there's a lot of it being done right now at the University of Colorado Boulder campus, is as these PhDs research it, they're finding that it has great potential application to just such a broad spectrum of issues that seniors suffer from. And this would be a interesting non-pharma approach to treating their symptoms, whether be it pain, sleep issues, and the list goes on.
You know, CBD, like anything that's new, Lee, always comes with its bit of controversy. It's interesting. It seems like almost everybody has some opinion on CBD as well as mm-hmm. marijuana legalization for medicinal purposes or for recreational use. And actually, we're going to bring Dr. Steve Elliott on the he's joining us on the phone this morning. And he is one of the speakers tonight, by the way, at the Renew Talks Health event at Renew Roaring Fork. So, Dr. Steve, you know, I remember a couple times in the last couple years when CBD oil, I want to say it was decriminalized at the federal level, right?
Right.
Or not just CBD oil, but CBD in general. Of course, a lot of people say, well, yeah, it's not the same as pot that gets you high. Yeah, right. And then I recall a couple of years ago, there was a truck driver that was driving a load of, I think it was supposed to be hemp, and he was stopped in Oklahoma, I believe. Oklahoma Highway Patrol tested it. Sure enough, it's over the THC limit, and so he's got, you know, big charges in Oklahoma. So everybody looks at that, and they said, see? Told you so. So I guess my question, to put all of that into a question, what is the difference between CBD, which is the subject of the talk tonight, and, you know, the stuff that hippies smoked back in the 60s and that is legal for recreational use in some states now?
Well, you break the marijuana plant down, let's call it cannabis because that's more respectful for the plant, but if you break the terpenes down, and these are the products that come out of the flower of the plant, and so THC is one of the terpenes, and CBD is one of the terpenes, and then there are a bunch of terpenes that are yet to be identified, but they have various qualities, and so what we're doing with CBD is that's mostly the medical part of the marijuana plant is the CBD. And you need a little tiny bit of THC. They're talking about 0.3% THC is kind of the cutoff for medical marijuana. So if you look at the CBD profile and you figure out which one of those CBDs is going to be most beneficial, then you use that, and you use just a tiny bit of THC to potentiate the CBD, and then you get your result. And it's, you know, either looking for anti-nausea, anti-inflammatory, pain relief, sleep, anxiety, all those things CBDs are helpful for. But since there is no milligram per kilogram dosage, what we do is we rely on the CBDs and not as much on the THC. But sometimes in certain conditions, you need more THC. So we rely on the people to be able to figure out which one works best for them.
I think there's another, I'm not even sure if I would call it a misconception, but in some cases, CBD, people have the opinion that anyone that proposes using CBD for any purpose is simply trying to use a backdoor method or an alternative method to get more marijuana. I'm talking about the recreational use of marijuana in the mainstream. Lee told me before we got started and talk a little bit about this, you are not a fan of opioids.
Never have been. That's a whole different discussion, but it's always seemed to me fairly peculiar that we as doctors are trying to save lives. And here's this substance which is basically presented by the pharmaceutical industry as a safe alternative. No, that was a lie. It wasn't safe at all. And they continue to do it. And there's a lot of people still using opioids. And I'm pretty sure that the statistic since the whole opioid crisis began, 500,000 dead people. And mostly it's a younger age group. Now, last year it was 97,000. And so it tells you it's not let up yet. And what I did, I was at a trauma center and I ran a Flight for Life team and I saw big stuff all the time. And we just never rode opioids, feeling that if we're going to take all our time to save a life, why are we going to kill them with pills at the end? So Consequently, I've never ridden any opioids. And I know that I'm unusual. There's not many people that can say that, I guess. But marijuana is totally efficient. And if anybody wants to ask Sanjay Gupta how he feels about marijuana as a substitute for opioids, I'm sure they get a full rendition of Sanjay saying marijuana is pretty effective for pain, and opioids kill a lot of people, and we got lied to, telling us that they were safe. They're not. That's where we are today.
It's also interesting from a medical perspective. There's a difference between medical use of cannabis and recreational use. I remember even as a kid back in the 70s hearing about the use of marijuana for cancer patients that were going through chemotherapy to help with the nausea that's often associated with chemotherapy. And wasn't there a federal program where they investigated the possibility of using cannabis for medical purposes?
There probably was, but I have no idea whatever happened. But the National Institute of Health has never quit using marijuana for chemo-induced nausea. And marijuana is very effective for nausea. And the reason we have a program at all in Colorado and throughout the country, realistically, is oncologists. They're the people who say, no, this totally works for nausea. And if you've run out of Zofran, your go-to substance is marijuana. So that's how the whole thing started, is the cancer deal.
Zofran, I assume, is an anti-nausea medication?
Yeah,
okay.
It's the premier one.
Gotcha. Lee, what time is the talk tonight for folks that want to listen to this?
So we have cocktails and some sort of cool elevated food at 5. That'll run to 6. And then we have an hour and a half long a talk that will be composed of a panel that includes Dr. Steve Elliott,
right,
as well as a University of Colorado PhD researcher leading the charge there in cannabis research, and her name is Dr. Angela Bryan. They will talk from 6 to 7:30, and there will be a Q&A session for the audience. I should say, though, that the event is at max capacity.
Really? So you don't have any more room for members of the public?
That's right.
Interesting. Okay. I guess that kind of underscores the popularity of the topic. For those both for and against its cannabis use.
Yeah, what I've learned from in my sessions with Dr. Steve Elliott and Dr. Angela Bryan is a lot of myths and preconceived notions that I had have been dispelled. There are plenty out there. So it's this interesting polarizing topic that a lot of people are curious about. And it's really starting to sort of pervade sort of popular consciousness now that, as you know, Colorado has been a green state for quite a while now.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about misconceptions. Obviously, Dr. Steve and Dr. Angela Bryan are not suggesting that facilities like Renew Roaring Fork turn into this place where all the old people are sitting in their room smoking joints. I'm guessing that is not what you're proposing at all, Dr. Steve.
No, we're proposing a nice way to get old. You know, because I'm 76. As you get older, your joints fall apart, your back falls apart, your neck falls apart, you have all kinds of gastrointestinal issues, you have difficulty sleeping. Marijuana is 100% benign. Well, you're not allowed to call it benign, but it does not have any negative effects that I have seen thus far. And since it has no minimal lethal dose, it's the absolute safest thing you can do for people in the throes of being old. So if you've got bad ankles, bad knees, bad back, et cetera, marijuana will help you, and it will help you sleep, and you'll wake up in the morning and not be drugged. So I think it's the ideal plan.
One of the arguments I've heard for the use of CBD and that kind of thing for medicinal purposes, and we're talking about creams and things like that, is the amount of THC, if any, is so low that there is no psychoactive effect. You said earlier in when we first got started, when we brought you into the conversation, that actually there are some thresholds and some things that a little bit of THC can help. So I guess I know that there's probably a huge list, and there's still a lot of research being done, because the legalization of marijuana, even for medicinal purposes, is still fairly new. But can you give us a short list of your experience up to this point of some things that each could be used for and could help with, particularly in the context of folks that may be in some kind of assisted living like Renew Roaring Fork?
You know, mostly the for older folks, there is not really a problem with the THC, because they don't require high THC. Mostly for the older folks, they require high CBD with some proportion of THC. It's hard to know which proportion. But the thing that becomes fairly evident with the childhood, the seizure disorders and autism, that sort of thing, is it's different. The kids are different than the older people. So with the kids, they do, some of those need high THC, which it seems totally against the grain, because who would ever think of giving a kid high THC? But that's what reverses some of the autism self-harm things. So there are conditions where you need higher amounts of THC. But mostly for what we're talking about CBDs. And CBDs for sleep, for appetite, for nausea, for, you know, all the things that marijuana does. Mostly you're talking about CBD. But then you have to use a little bit of THC for some of the conditions to potentiate it, and it's that's trial and error. There is no milligram per kilogram dosage, so whatever works best is, and you start slowly and then you build up. And if you start with edibles, then you've got no way to get rid of the high if you have high THC. So we're pretty careful with edibles. Topicals, lotions, and tinctures, drops under the tongue, those are fine. They work fine, and you don't get any problem with THC.
Does metabolism play into it? Is that one of the big reasons why edibles are kind of a moving target?
Well, the edibles are a moving target because it has to be absorbed through the gastrointestinal system, so that takes time, and then it's not predictable what you're going to get when you're done. So I recommend edibles for people who already used edibles. And if they're using them for the first time, I recommend go very slowly. Because I don't want people getting high and sitting in the corner sucking their thumb because they ate too much of a cookie.
That does not sound fun at all.
No, I mean, we don't see it very much, realistically. Most people are pretty well aware of what they're doing, and they intentionally do not take too much THC.
Okay. Again, we're talking with Dr. Steve Elliott. He is a doctor. He'll be speaking tonight at Renew Roaring Fork at a sold-out event, so no room for any additional folks. So that's kind of the point of the conversation this afternoon is give a little information that folks might not be able to get because they didn't get in early on that event. And talk about the medical community, Dr. Steve. You said the whole medical use of marijuana was somewhat driven by oncologists that saw the benefit of using marijuana for nausea that's associated with chemotherapy and other therapies as a treatment for cancer. Has the medical community as a whole embraced, let's set the marijuana aside for a second, have they embraced CBD, in terms of the topicals and the sublinguals? What did you, the tinctures?
Well, to me, and this goes back from when I started doing this 10 years ago, but 10 years ago, most of the medical community did not see any benefit in marijuana at all. I mean, that was my experience. But now that they see this, and they see their patients tell them what kind of relief they get, and it really depends on the disease process, but the patients tell the doctor this is what helped. And then the doctor sees the patient he's already seen him for 5 years, he sees him for another 5 years, and notices the improvement. And so that doctor then tells the next doctor, and then that patient then tells the next patient. And eventually, by word of mouth, everybody knows marijuana is really effective. And so when I talk to a doctor now about somebody's rheumatoid arthritis improving with medical marijuana, they're not surprised. They've seen it for the last 10 years. They know that it works. And so there's really a few holdout institutions. But by and large, most doctors who've experienced it firsthand say, safe alternative, and it works. So that's what I'm seeing.
Can medical marijuana or CBD aid even in chronic RA, where you would use chemotherapy to treat?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's the anti-inflammatory effect. It totally works.
Interesting.
In fact, all the autoimmune diseases have some symptomatology that's improved just simply using marijuana. It can be just CBD, period, with a little tiny bit of THC. It doesn't really matter a whole lot, but it's very effective. And if you walk around and talk to all the people with, any autoimmune disease, lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, any of those, they all get better. I'm not saying that they get cured. I'm saying that their symptoms are massively reduced.
Interesting. In all the talks, in all the conversations you have with people around the country, what is the most often asked question?
Does it work? That's the most often asked question. The next most often asked question is, can I take this on the airplane? Oh. No, I mean, they're going from Colorado and they're going to go to Chicago. And they have to fly over Kansas, and then they wonder if that's safe. And I don't have the answer to any of those questions.
Yeah, you're not an attorney. You're a doctor, right?
No, yeah, I'm not a legal person.
I'm thinking of DeForest Kelly now. I'm a doctor, not an attorney. Lee, you're taking a lot of notes. You have any follow-up for Dr. Steve?
The more I read about cannabis and CBD and its applications, all the products you can pull out of the plant, I'm noticing more and more every time I read another article or hear from you, I'm hearing more symptoms or diseases or, you know, different ailments that it seems to be applicable to. Really, how broad is that range of issues that it covers?
Huge. It's huge. There's probably no diseases in the whole PDR that marijuana doesn't help in some way. I mean, if you think of all the symptoms that we have, you know, pain, nausea, sleep deprivation, hunger, et cetera, marijuana helps all those. And so it's you know, the game is to use it appropriately and then understand what kind of relief it gives you. But the thing that it really does do is with the autoimmune disease, which I just mentioned, but all the arthritises, I mean, it just reduces the inflammation. So if you think of all the people in the United States this year, they're going to have total joint replacements, hips, knees, shoulders, whatever.
Well, it's huge.
Yeah, all those people have pain before they have their joint replacement. Please don't give those people opioids. Please give them some marijuana. They will be much happier, much safer.
If you were to pick apart that broad range of applications, those health issues, you mentioned arthritis and a broad variety of types of arthritis. Where else does that list go? How would you describe it?
If you start the list, you have to start with neurologic conditions, you know, things like MS and Parkinson's and that sort of thing. And then you see all the people with migraine headaches and all the people with any kind of spinal injury, because that is a neurologic thing, you know, the spinal cord. But when they get sciatica from nerve impingement from degenerative arthritis, it just helps the sciatica, and the sciatica is a nerve. So any kind of neurologic injury, it's way more impressive with pediatrics, because those little kids with epilepsy who are, you know, they have Dravet syndrome, so they have 100 seizures a day. Give them CBDs, and this is specifically CBDs, but their seizure disorders go down to about 2 a month, 1 a month, something like that. And then if you talk about the kids with autism, now, as I mentioned, those kids need higher THC and less CBD. But if you look at a kid with autism who is destined for an institution, and then this kid is using, and we found this out to the parents, but they need high THC as opposed to high CBD. But usually they need CBD and THC. But if you give them high THC, this kid who had no chance in life at all now can communicate, can think, no longer is hitting his head against the wall, and sometimes ends up in third grade. They just, it's, to me, that's been the most remarkable thing. Is getting the brain functioning correctly. And THC does that. Now, how it does that, yeah, it gets into the whole cannabinoid system in the human body. And that has yet to be studied. I mean, they're doing a lot of studying, but however that mechanism works, it totally does work. And you see these kids who had no chance now have a chance. And I think that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Now, we work with seniors at Renew Roaring Fork Assisted Living and Memory Care. And one of the reasons that this is, I think, a very apropos talk for us to do is because we've been asked questions by many adult children and sometimes residents about cannabis use and whether it can be allowed inside senior housing communities. And, you know, how does that work? Now, part of our answer is we don't prescribe medications. We follow doctor's orders and, you know, provide oversight. But how does this apply to seniors?
Well, you know, I mean, when we're talking about memory care, the disease process we all think about is Alzheimer's. And there's pretty good indication that there's less amyloid plaque formed in the brain with people who use CBD. And amyloid plaque is the marker for Alzheimer's. So I would try, if it were up to me, I would suggest to the federal government that every nursing home patient who opts to use marijuana for their memory should be allowed to do that. Period, end of the story. Just let people with, and if you need something for sleep, get away from your pharmaceuticals and try CBDs because it's way, way safer. And there is no hangover and no secondary problems. Now, I know I'm saying stuff that may not be agreed by everybody, but if they would just try it, and if they would just try it in their nursing home in, you know, I don't know, Wisconsin, and see how it does with those patients, I think they'd all find the same thing I'm saying. Really effective. Nobody falls out of bed and breaks a hip. We're in good shape.
Again, Dr. Steve Elliott will be speaking tonight along with, it's a panel discussion along with CU researcher Dr. Angela Bryan, who's studying the use of CBD for elderly patients for, as you heard Dr. Elliott say, a variety of things that are prevalent in the demographic, if you will. Again, it's hosted by Renew Roaring Fork, again, as an example of how common the topic is, how interested mm-hmm. people are in this topic. It is a sold-out event. There are no more – I mean, it's free, but there are no more seats that are available for folks to check it out. So, Lee, does that mean maybe you might do this topic again during the Renew Talks Health series?
Yes. I mean, we've had talks in the past where there was also a similar situation where we reached just maximal capacity and we realized maybe we should do a talk up Valley because we're located in Glenwood Springs or just, you know, do a second talk on the topic because there was demand. One of the, end of last year, we brought in Dr. Tim Boyd. Mm. And he's from the University of Colorado, and he's an Alzheimer's researcher. They have a very novel approach to fighting Alzheimer's, and they're in a phase two human trial. So there's a lot of promise with what they're doing. And so a lot of families attended that talk. Mm-hmm. Some neurologists and MDs were in the audience as well. And what we realized is that there was also sort of philanthropic interest in the audience. And as a result of that talk, there was a local family who decided to contribute a huge sum of money to that lab. And we realized that there can really be a very sizable social impact that goes beyond really a really solid educational lecture and goes into actually helping sort of jet fuel thrust forward an important research effort like that.
One final thought, Dr. Elliott. You mentioned a couple times that when treating autism, young people who are on the autism spectrum, it actually requires, in order to help them, and you've seen some profound cases where there were great results, You said it requires a high amount of THC. Does the body build a tolerance to this THC? So is there over time less of a psychoactive side effect from that THC use?
No, we don't know. I mean, that gets into the metabolism of the brain.
Gotcha.
And how does it? Why does it work this way? It seems so counterintuitive that high THC would not be the right way to treat a autistic kid because they already have behavioral problems. And if it weren't for parents noticing what their kid does and seeing if they added a little bit of THC to the CBD, because a lot of the autistic kids have seizure disorders, so consequently they need the CBDs. And the parents start giving them the CBDs for their seizures, and they notice that there's a little bit more THC, their behavior gets better. And so this is not neurologic research. This is parents of autistic children who figured this out on their own. And, you know, there's a lot more study that needs to be done. I mean, this is not just a Colorado problem. This is a United States problem, but it's, you know, it's universal. There's autistic kids throughout the planet. And if this turns out to be something that's more useful for all the kids, I say let's do it. So we're seeing kids improve. That's the bottom line.
So Dr. Steve, my mom is about 72 years old, and she has never smoked a cigarette in her life. I would say that there is a stigma in a person like her and many of her friends. I'd call her kind of a soccer grandma at this point. But there's a stigma around having to smoke a medication in order to ingest it. But what I found interesting is even though she has never done any drugs in her life, one of her friends, who is also a very conservative 70-year-old, said that she was taking it and she was ingesting it in some other way. It might have been through edibles or some other, you know, non-smoking fashion. And I saw my mom suddenly, her thinking totally morphed, and I was amazed that suddenly she was open-minded about it. Have you seen that in any other seniors or, you know, people coming into your office with rheumatoid arthritis? She has osteoarthritis, just as an FYI.
That's pretty typical. I mean, you know, come on, I'm 76, so in my age group, there are not a lot of people that say marijuana is really a good thing. I mean, that's rare. However, the people who were all against marijuana through the Nixon years, et cetera, have found that, you know, whatever they were thinking about with the THC, this CBD cream seems to work really well for my knee. And so you see an awful lot of older people at the bridge tournament talking about Uncle Harry using CBDs for his shoulder because it helped his golf game. And it increases the quality of life for a bunch of older people just by relieving the joint pains and the back pains. So it's pretty typical that they were totally against this substance because they were told it was a dangerous drug, and it had no medical usage. Now they see, well, it's not really dangerous because there's no minimal lethal dose, and everybody in the neighborhood's using it, so it seems to be okay. And there is no danger, is the bottom line. And once they realize this, then it's just fine to go buy some CBD cream and put it on your ankle or CBD cream on your knee or on your back, or use some drops at night, you know, just to, you know, a lot of times when people have pain, they're just uncomfortable and they can't relax. And if they use some CBD, THC, either one, at night for sleep, they'll get a good night's sleep and they'll have a whole lot of relaxed muscles in the morning.
So that's really interesting.
So your mom is right, is what I'm saying.
She's right. And she sounds pretty typical.
Mom is always right.
Yeah, mom is always right. That's correct. So in similar fashion, just as you see that shift in thinking and sort of the evaporation of the stigma, what are you seeing with respect to medical institutions? And sort of where I'm coming from in that question is there are a lot of medical institutions. Maybe it's these could be hospitals, or these could be physician groups, or even universities. The University of Colorado, an extraordinarily innovative, research institution with hospitals as well. I'm seeing them, move forward on initiatives and seeing promise in different areas and different things that can be treated. What do you see out there as an MD?
Well, I mean, I know what I would like to see. I would like to see a diminution of opioid usage and, for anesthesia and for hospice, and that's it. And then I would like to see a lot of people using marijuana for acute and chronic pain conditions. And if I saw that, I would say, well, we're making progress. We'll have lot fewer medication deaths that will be erased. But I think that we need to study it. We need to find out what else it does. If it does all this miraculous stuff with seizure disorders in little kids, it's so neuroprotective. What other neurologic diseases can it protect? I mean, if I could find, they have what they call RSO, which is Rick Simpson oil for cancer treatment, and that's up in the air as to whether or not it's effective. But a lot of people want to use it because it could well be effective. If we could find something that marijuana really does, I mean, it stops apoptosis, which is the splitting of the cancer cell. But if they could find something that was even more cancer protective, wouldn't that be delightful? I would love to get rid of that disease.
I suppose Lee asked a personal question. I'll ask one too. You're talking about use of CBDs in help with migraines. So let me, little context, I take a vasoconstrictor for occasional use when I feel the onset of a migraine. In order for CBDs to be effective, would you have to take it every day? And isn't that counterintuitive for what we've, heard all our lives? Well, I don't want to have to take a medication every day. Why not just take it, at onset or as needed?
No, you don't. It's not an everyday deal, and people have migraine headaches. You being one of them, but they're episodic, and the way to tell is if you feel an aura coming on, and you feel a little queasy and you get a little visual disturbance, then use some marijuana right then, immediately, and you can forego the symptoms. And if there is something that's more effective for migraine headaches, then, I asked the first 100 people about Imitrex. Have you used Imitrex? Yes. Have you used marijuana? Yes. What works better, marijuana or Imitrex? 100% of the time, marijuana.
It's you want to know what's ironic? Imitrex didn't work for me. I had to take Maxol. Yeah, rizatriptan. Yeah. Interesting. But see, again, CBDs, at least in your experience, are effective without the THC, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But again, it's so personalized. You might have to modify it a little bit. Have to add a little more THC. You have to take a little CBD away. I mean, it's hard to say.
Sure.
But it's very individualized.
Okay. There you go. So again, Dr. Steve Elliott, obviously a huge proponent of use of CBDs under a wide variety of circumstances. I suppose from a company standpoint, the radio station would say very similar to what you said earlier, Lee, in the assisted living community, which is, with the care of a doctor and under controlled circumstances and that kind of thing. And I really like what you said, Dr. Lee, that, every situation is a little bit different. And you've said this a couple times throughout the conversation, and that is you need to be paying attention and see what kind of results you're getting. And it's not just one of those magic things that, magic pill solves all problems. You need to adapt it for your personal situation and what you're going through at that time.
And whatever you do, just always remember, there is no minimal lethal dose. it cannot kill you. That, a lot of people have fear of marijuana because they think it's dangerous and they may die. No, that's opioids. You may die from opioids. You will never die from marijuana.
However, THC does have that, what's the term I'm looking for? It can make you paranoid, right? So you might think you're going to die. You're just not going to die.
The paranoid ingredient, and that's what I said. If you do the edibles with too much THC in it, you're going to sit in a corner and suck your thumb for a few hours. So we try to avoid that at all costs.
All right. Hopefully that was a little comic relief for a very serious conversation.
It was good.
Again, if you want to stay in touch, learn more about upcoming Renew Talks Health in their Renew Talks Health series, it's renewsenior.com. That's their website. Again, there will be more of these talks, maybe not necessarily on this subject, but more definitely that have some serious topics about aging and folks that are in assisted living. Again, tonight's talk with Dr. Elliott, the panel discussion is full. No more spaces available, so hopefully it won't be too long before another similar one like this. Lee, you were saying that when you were preparing for tonight's talk, which again is full, there are no additional seats for tonight's panel discussion, unfortunately. So for a lot of people, this conversation here may be their only way to find out some of the information that will be discussed tonight. Back to the question, Lee, you said that when you were researching the panel discussion tonight, you actually found some surprising information.
Yes. I mean, so a couple of things come to mind. There's more and more research being funded by major institutions, and the University of Colorado is, you know, a lot of their research on cannabis is being funded. And so there's this shift. And as I did the research, I realized that from a political standpoint, you know, there are you look at both sides of the aisle, and John Boehner, who is the former Speaker of the House and a Republican, now sits on the board of a major cannabis company, and the same with another gentleman named Bill Weld. And so I was just surprised, and I see there's a shift in, you know, popular opinion happening.
And kind of like we talked about with Dr. Elliott, as experience changes, you know, because experience really educates opinion, right? So
yes.
Whatever you experience, your opinion may change depending on what your experience at that particular time is.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the more that it is being researched, the more that, you know, evidence-based scientific data is coming out showing that, you know, it might not benefit things that they thought it benefited, but it's coming out also that it is benefiting certain things as well. So it's quite interesting.
Right. And from an organizational standpoint, I think you and I are definitely on the same page, and that is with the advice and under the watch of a doctor, these things may be right for you. But, of course, be careful and be mindful about dosages and that kind of thing as you go through.
Oh, absolutely. So this is a program and a decision that is usually made between patients, doctors, and in certain cases with the elderly, other family members. Mm. And that's how it's done. And we just sort of follow the program that they set.
Right. Absolutely. And you never know. It'd be interesting to see what happens, as you say, with all that research over the next few years. As, again, it has not been that long that all of this research has been going on. And so it will be interesting to see what happens in the next few years.
Agreed. If there is, I guess what I'd put out there, if there is anyone after hearing this conversation is interested in sort of progressive research or healthcare topics that are sort of on the cutting edge, they have any good ideas, they can feel free to connect with us. Let's see. So they can go to renewsenior.com, and we have our phone number there. So that's renewsenior.com.
All right. Dr. Elliott, thanks so much for spending so much time with us. Appreciate it.
Well, Gabe, thank you for the discussion. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All the best. Safe travels.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Take care, Lee.
Thanks.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.